CrowPod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the CrowPod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
God, I'm still I'm loving the Valor McCash Rangers. what a fucking crest!
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Followed by Mark Dingwall, the only the only mutual that I've got.
That doesn't stun me. If I'm being totally honest, That one hasn't came as an enormous shocker, frankly.
Another episode of the CrowPod, Friday edition, but it's international break, so time doesn't matter. And of course, joining me, Shane, David Edgar's here, sick with the vid yet again. You horrible, horrible bastard! Hi, David.
Yeah, it's only second time. I don't know if second counts as yet again.
You're halfway to me. You're halfway to me.
Yeah, right. So two, I think, is Felix. Yeah, a bit of a fucker. Could have seen past it if I'm being totally honest with you. It's funny though. I was saying to the boys that for some people, COVID has become, I think, just this political thing rather than to me or to you, or an illness. And so I posted there in a week, oh, I've got COVID again. So I might be, I was only away for the show for one day, but just to let people know. And somebody said, why did you test? And I said, well, I've had COVID and I felt ill and I thought this feels a bit like COVID again. So I tested to see if it was COVID and it was COVID. It's not like it affects in any way. There's no restrictions or anything. If I could be arsed leaving the house, I'm perfectly able to. I wouldn't, because I don't want to give people COVID. But yeah, it's just a strange thing. Why did you test to see if you had the illness that you have? It's an odd question, yeah. You know? Do you think, would you go, it's like, I grabbed to see if my arm was missing the bottom half, and it was missing the bottom half, so I went to hospital to say what happened to the other half of my arm. You wouldn't necessarily say the guy was being a weirdo for that, would you?
I'll tell you, the third time, unlucky, because that's the one that tried to kill me. So just you really don't want that one.
No, I
you
don't want that one. I didn't want this one.
Oh, that's, yeah. Peter Ewart's back because Todd's still suspended in Italy. Hi, Peter.
Hello, everybody. I don't have COVID currently, but I have had it twice. David, you haven't gone through or won't have gone through what half the country goes through, which is it COVID or is it just a hangover?
Yeah, that's true. I was actually saying, though, to Shane, he was kind enough to inquire about how I was feeling the other day, and I was saying
Don't tell people I'm nice. Yeah,
Sorry. He was phoning to demand money with menaces and then slipped it in at the end. Is that better? Do you prefer that? Right. As I said to him, the thing about my body is because I trained it, a sort of reverse Olympian, and feeling like shit, because for 15 years, it was used to feeling like shit every single day. That my body, although it's completely broken down and fucked, is tough as fuck, right? So have you ever seen that Simpsons where Mr. Burns goes to Mayo Clinic and they say, you've got everything, yeah, but they're all in perfect balance?
I'm indestructible.
Yeah, that's basically me. I'll have to be like 108. I'll look
indestructible.
I'll look like no, even a gust of wind. In this, I'll look like absolute shit. I'll look like Zelda from the Terrorhawks already, and but I'll survive because my body's like fucking no problem. We used to do this shit every morning, you know. I actually got sick once. See if you stop drinking, I'm sure a few of your listeners have, because I drank every night, right? So I was used to feeling a level of hungover. That was generally how I felt. Because myself, like, non-drunk time was just passing the time till I could get drunk again. And I remember getting ill after I stopped drinking, thinking, this feels horrible. I don't like this at all. It was just a really mild sickness bug. And I was like, I used to do this to myself deliberately. and then I was crying, want my mum. I'm here, although I do warn you, if anyone heard the daily update on Thursday, words are becoming quite difficult at times to find. I couldn't think of the word till, you know, as in a receptacle to put.
I'll tell you what, yeah, the mind fog thing, I don't know if it was, you know, with you, Peter, you've had it twice, I've had it three or four times, whatever, I don't know anymore. But certainly after the second one, the mind fog thing seemed very, very, what's the word? real, that's what it was.
It's that kind of a thing where it's, you know, was it middle age coming anyway, or is it now?
Yeah.
I'm like tired at 5 o'clock every day, and it's like, it's to the point where you can't really keep your eyes open. And it's was that happening anyway, or is this new? It's like, not sure.
Well, see, that's the thing, you know, because since I left working in the bars and everything, because now I'm not out, you know, my schedule is not for the first time in years between working in bars and being a journalist, my schedule is not based around like a 1 p.m. to 4 a.m. type of thing, you know? And so, yeah, now it's like we have dinner at, 6:30 or 7, and then we're sat there watching television and the kid goes to bed, and about 9:30 I'm looking for my slippers and my stocking cap and I'm ready to go get the warm glass of milk and retire. It's like I'm at least in bed, you know, like I'm reading or got an audio book or fucking whatever, and I'm there till 12:30, 1 o'clock, but I'm in bed by 11 every night now, and it's just very I can see why people do this. Like, I never understood the benefits, but it's not bad. It's okay.
I will get a wee bit better because generally, and I think I've figured it out about why I keep my hours. And part of it is the podcast, because obviously a lot of the other podders have full-time jobs, so they can only do it in the evenings, which, you know, makes sense. So I'll be recording, you know, 8, 9, 10, and then editing. And then so there is that excuse. But the other thing, and it hit me, is see that point about midnight, when everyone goes to bed and it's dark and I get 3 or 4 hours totally to myself where no one's going to send me a message. No one's going to, I absolutely adore that, but it comes a bit earlier in winter because I think darkness tells people. And I read a thing once, and I know you're interested in stuff like that, Shane, that modern man is chronically underslept. Doctors say, because back in the old days, we went with, when it got dark, right?
So in the summer, in the winter, you went to bed at 5 o'clock.
In the winter, when it was colder, and obviously you didn't have the, you know, it took more out of you. You went to bed a lot earlier, and in the summer when it was warm and everything, and you know you were getting more sunlight and a happier person. But now, because we can artificially choose when we get up and when we don't, that modern man is chronically underslept, which might explain the rise in popularity of coffee.
I went and got a great cup of coffee this morning.
There you go. See,
what, autumn back for what was it? The man with sweater,
that's
with plaid shirt underneath.
Mr. Autumn man. Yeah, this is my favorite time of the year, and I do. I walk about with a wool jumper on, the cup of hot coffee that's like pumpkin spice latte.
My collared shirt with the top two buttons
that's
undone.
It. Looking at the leaves and going, ah, you know, feel that bracing thing in the air. Yeah, that's me. I like when it's like this, when it's a bit colder, dry, sunny through the day, but dark at a reasonable hour. Like most people, I don't like when we then get into sort of January, February, and it decides, what about a hurricane every day and pishing 45-degree rain?
I mean, I like when Fahrenheit and Celsius kind of level out at a negative number over here for a couple weeks. That's always fun. Peter, I was talking to our old buddy Ross McAdam.
Yep.
From the original CrowPod fame, because he brought up and was he didn't understand why they're trying to implement British summertime year round as opposed to Celtic Park time. That they want to do this. It's like a movement over here too to get rid of daylight saving time. People, it's not daylight savings. There's only one S in the word, daylight saving time. But it's not the they always say like the fall one is easy. It's the spring one that fucks with people when you got to move the clocks forward because you get like a higher rate of heart attack, higher rate of car accidents. There's a huge impact on the economy for about 2 weeks that they've wow. measured now, which I mean, that right there will be enough to get the change, especially, I mean, now that your government operates like ours at the behest of billionaires buying people, you know, mm-hmm. if it's going to affect their stock prices, I guarantee that'll get fixed in short order.
Yeah, you don't actually need it now, do you, really?
No.
Back in the day.
Well, I wonder, like, Peter, hold on. Now, is Ireland on the same time? Like, is it still Greenwich or GMT?
Well, you see, the thing we always used to tell people was that Belfast was 45 minutes back to see the confused look that you would get.
Actually, in my experience, Belfast is about 60 years back.
Well, I mean, there's an argument that the west of Scotland's even further back than that, but, you know.
Well, at least we do have things like you can get a gay cake baked at a baker's. Things like that, you know, we don't. That's not really
as long as it's before 10 p.m., right?
As long everything as has to be. But yes. On that, actually, you mentioned there about the government, and I am thankful to Private Eye, who are always good. The direction of policy under Liz Truss clearly appeals to some potential new donors. Take Pareto Financial Planning, who donated £50,000, a Manchester firm that offers to support high net worth clients through complex tax planning matters and help investors looking to reduce tax bills, offering 10 tips to avoid inheritance tax. I think we can see where this is going. I think we can definitely see what sort of thing that we're going to have over here. But it's really good, though, if you're really rich, because they've cut the highest rate of tax today in the UK, which is great, because there's no, you know, there's nothing worse than, I think, rich people paying tax.
If every single part of Reagan's economic policy has proved to work, so there's no reason why you guys should not be implementing one 40 years later that directly mirrors that. I mean, you can see how great and stable and you know, equitable the United States economy is.
I've spotted what trickle-down economics is. That you know how in the world that there's an equal and opposite reaction for every action? Yeah. Trickle-down economics is right-wing communism. It's a good idea when you wrote it down, but then in terms of execution, it just simply doesn't work, right? So you might like the theory of it, much as I like my theory of a submarine that runs on Fanta. But unfortunately, to actually make it, you know, I drew a picture of a submarine and there was a little gap at the side, a little petrol cap that I put Fanta goes in here. And I handed it to the boffins to build it, but unfortunately, it's unfortunate. It's the same with trickle-down economics.
So you prefer Nazi fizzy drinks to fill your submarines?
Is Fanta Nazi? I thought it was
Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
that's specific. No, well, that's... So just like, you know, how Pepsi invaded the Soviet Union,
yeah.
Coca-Cola was too American for the Nazis, and so they came up with Fanta.
I didn't know that. There you go. Yeah. Well, the educational CrowPod. I'm not a big... Fanta fan anyway. I'm a local Scotch drinker, a thing called Red Cola, which I don't believe you get anywhere else other than Scotland. And it's hard to, Peter, I'm sure you've come across Red Cola.
Oh yes, and right. And there's an equal to Northern Irish delicacy, brown lemonade.
Like yep,
yeah,
that's right. Which is more appealing than it sounds, right? People, the word brown goes in anywhere, and it just it's true, isn't it? I mean, somebody says you put the word brown in, and it conjures up a bad image. But it's a hard taste to describe. It sort of tastes like sweet water, and that's my choice. Whereas Fanta's very, very.
It tastes like your teeth are dissolving.
Yes, it does, and it feels like, you know, oh my god, there's That's the other thing we're doing, Shane. We're scrapping the sugar tax. So the one good thing I can see at the recent legislative changes is we can get fucking proper iron brew back rather than this sack.
Yeah, apparently the ones that we have here are more traditional than the ones that you guys have had available.
Yeah, you've got the real stuff. Yeah. You've still got the original stuff.
Well, and that's weird because you know most of our pops and you know the fizzy drinks over here have corn syrup in them as opposed to actual sugar. Like the Pepsi that I drink, I have to get the special that comes in a special can that's like made with real sugar. Like that's the, you know the big. It costs more because it has actual sugar in it instead of something made out of corn.
But then you've got horror shows over there like Mountain Dew and stuff like that.
Yeah. And root beer, what the fuck is that stuff?
It's fantastic.
Really? You think?
I love a good root beer.
I think it tastes like lotion.
You got to get like something like Barks, or you get like a lot of the smaller independent places that, you know, like brew it in house. It's really, really good. It's got like a little bit more of a, not like a Dr. Pepper, not that kind of a bite to it, but you know, more than just the like you see how lotion describes, I don't know, A&W and stuff like that. Yeah, I think quite well.
I do like an A&W Dandelion and Burdock. So I don't want to slang too much. In honor of, I mean, this week, of course, Kyle Lafferty was back in the news. And in honor of Peter being on the Crowpod, I have a story about another Northern Irish legend that I wanted to share with you. And it's, of course, probably the greatest footballer Northern Ireland's ever produced. I speak, of course, about George Best. And a story about his time at Hibs that tickled me, and I think it will tickle you. So I'll just pop this up here.
I need old music for when we're doing
you do,
this.
You do, yeah, right. But
let me make a note.
Best had a short stint in Scotland, but even that involved some serious hell-raising. He was 35 and passed his best, but the winger shimmied into the Hibernian dressing room to the acclaim of everyone except his new manager, who described the signing as a disaster waiting to happen. It didn't take long for him to be proved right. In February 1980, Best went AWOL for days, missing training. Nobody knew where he was until the tabloids published photos of him stumbling out of a London nightclub. With a big cut, this is the best story you're going to hear this week, folks. With a big cup game against Ayr United coming up next, the gaffer handed Best a final warning, ordering him to spend the night before the big game in his room at Edinburgh's Balmoral Hotel. It's a very nice hotel, very posh hotel. Lots of famous people stay there, as you're about to find out. But Georgie's plans for a quiet one were derailed when he bumped into the hard-drinking French rugby player Jean-Pierre Reeve in the lobby, who insisted they go for a session. Things then escalated when Debbie Harry, lead singer of Blondie and every 70s teenager's wet dream, joined them at the bar. Best has no recollection of what happened next other than bedlam. His next memory came at 10 a.m. when hotel staff carried him from the bar to his bed. 1 hour later, a Hibernian coach arrived to pick him up for the game. He found Best passed out on a couch next to Debbie Harry, unable to say anything except, "I'm so pissed." Eventually, after a gallon of coffee and several slaps, Best opened his eyes, gestured towards the Blondie singer and said, "No offence, mate, but what would you rather do, spend the afternoon with her or play Ayr United?" He didn't make the game. Now, in terms of questions that have the most obvious answer, would you rather, guys, I'm going to ask you and ask the listeners, would you rather play for Hibs against Ayr United or spend an afternoon?
Shag prime Deborah Harry.
Or prime, 1980, the hottest pop star in the world. Would you rather spend the afternoon with her? I've got to be honest and say, I only find out the result when listening to the classifieds at 5:45 if it had been me. What a man.
Since Lafferty was the bridge era, we had another that era player that made the news this morning with maybe one of the funniest lines I've ever heard a player say about himself, because Lewis McLeod retired at the ripe old age of 28. And apparently said in an interview that some people may have referred to me as injury prone. It's like, yes, everyone did. That is true.
you're not allowed to rankle at that, I think, if you're... It's just a shame, isn't it? We've talked about this.
He was fantastic. Well, I mean, Peter, probably you would have seen him play literally every single match for us, I would reckon.
Probably.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, because, I mean, you pretty much went to every away day back then. So.
That's because Peter came up with "This is fun." It was his idea, and he had to live it despite.
Yeah, he had to embrace it. Yeah,
despite the fact that it stopped being fun when it started to rain at Brecon.
That was an apocalyptic day. But yeah, when you're up on sort of 6 a.m. on a Sunday morning, heading up to Peterhead in January, it's like, you kind of question what are we doing here.
When I had to climb a fence at Annan to see the game, because Annan had oversold, understandably, and their ground isn't, there's no levels to it. So basically it was like a line of seven people in front of you, and you couldn't see the whole pitch. So I went to the back as loads of Bears were doing, climbed up on the wall to see it. And then over the other stand, you could see a pub that was showing the game because it was live on TV. And I thought, what the fuck am I doing? You know, we've driven 3 hours here to climb up a wall to have to see any of the match against fucking Annan that's on the television. And if you actually look, the crowd thins out in the second half of that match because half the crowd fucked off to the pub.
But I mean, David, that was pretty much every away match. Yeah, I'm thinking Arbroath, Montrose, all around there. Half time comes and people go, nah, they're off.
Yeah, I've done my bit. I've checked in. It was, and because in theory it was such a good laugh getting to go to all these wee towns and stuff, and there were funny moments. But then you'd get in and you'd watch an Eastus Agriou cluster fucking his way up against some guy who was still wearing his postman's uniform because he hadn't had time to change between his shift ending and coming to the match, and you just thought, what the fuck are we doing? So, I'm with George Best on this one. When the opportunity comes to bang Debbie Harry or go to Annan, then bang Debbie Harry, I say.
You were talking about printing too many tickets. The Elgin Cup game, famously. Where the police turned up and go, how many tickets have you got? Yeah, about 3,000. Maybe four, maybe four and a half. Not sure. Okay, game's off.
Yeah, can you imagine the cop? He's like, yeah, game's off. Like, are you kidding? We've sold all these tickets. Yeah, you've sold all the tickets, plus the tickets again, plus the tickets a third time. And this town can't hold the amount of people that you've... Never mind the fucking the football part. Oh, in terms of staunchness, no, how about this? My local team, Winning Rangers, colours red, white and blue, this Friday night, or tonight in fact as we record, we'll take on Cambuslang Rangers, colours red, white and blue.
Yes.
Now that is the staunchest fucking night. It'll be held at Ibrox, and there will in fact of course be a band playing at it. And for those of you who are maybe, I'm not talking your traditional drum, guitar, bass and singer lineup when I say band. That is the staunchest game of it. You know how when Hibs play Celtic and you want both teams to lose? Can both teams?
No, that's one of those airline disaster matches. That's what that was.
Well, could both teams tonight win? That would be quite pleasant. That's the staunchest game of football I think you can possibly imagine.
There's a team in Lisburn called Ballymacash Rangers who play at the Bluebell Stadium. It's worth going and having a look at their club crest. I think their Twitter is at Cash Rangers. But the club crest is something to behold.
I'm playing the hold music. You can hear it here, right?
I could play my mandolin.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
this is fantastic.
Yeah, I've just looked it up. This is cool. Everyone, you're on your phone anyway. Go and have a look at Ballymacash Rangers.
Yeah, at Cash Rangers. I kind of want a kit now. Oh, look, they're just as old as me. Perfect.
There you go then.
I'm searching up a kit for this. Hell yes. All right. I'll be having one of them. Yeah, you know, in another good consistent CrowPod messaging, I found David was shocked. I would have thought you'd seen this, but I'll give you some credit due to the COVID that, you know, it could have slipped under the radar. But Julian Borgner in New York magazine, and then this was also published on The Guardian yesterday. I know, David, you are a big Guardian subscriber and reader. I'm aware. The first one that you go for in the morning.
If ever I'm feeling guilty about, you know, everything in my life, then, the first place I go there is to be liberally guilted into. Yeah, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, so we knew some of this. I think I feel because, like, when I read it, it didn't shock me, but some of the details did. But the lead here, Richard Nixon and his wife Pat were exposed to potentially harmful radiation while staying at the U.S. ambassador's residence in Moscow in 1959, according to declassified Secret Service documents.
Oh,
see, I feel like this had been mentioned at some point, but and apparently it was reported out in 1976, but nobody really picked up on it because they had no idea of what it was. But James Golden, who was on Nixon's Secret Service detail, you know, he's vice president, and this is during his famous, you know, when him and Khrushchev do the kitchen debate and whatnot on his tour there. Goldson said he was later told by the State Department that he had been exposed. So this is Goldson finding out. And he found out 17 years later. So in 1976, he's told by the State Department he had been exposed to, quote, massive doses of ionizing radiation produced by an atomic battery used by Soviet spies to power bugging devices hidden in the building.
That's a bit offside. Bugging is one thing, but to actually fucking, you know, give you radiation.
Why do you need a fucking atomic battery? Like,
well, if you have one, why not? It probably lasts longer.
They figured out that Nixon would. Okay, so was it? It's 5 Röntgen per year, I think, is what you're. You know, like the occasional exposure level for normal people. This was about 15 per hour. A fairly high amount there for Dick. But Goldson, he starts telling the story. He said, we sat down in beds facing each other and began berating the Russians in loud voices, cursing them for pulling a trick like this and wondering in loud voices why they were taking us for fools and asking each other if they thought they were going to get away with this. And then suddenly the bugging devices and battery were turned off. So
probably saved themselves. Saved themselves from a quick cancer by doing that.
Yeah. Nixon outlasted it, you know. So
I always think it would be great. I always feel for the person whose job it is to bug me. Can you imagine having to listen to all that? Although technically, I suppose he would be getting half of a Heart and Hand subscription for free because he wouldn't hear you guys replying to me in the headphones. But he would get half of Heart and Hand for absolutely free. That must be the worst job in the world, by the way, being a bugging translator. Because in movies, of course, everybody, you know, talks really interesting and important stuff. In real life, you know, you'd get the super spy and he goes into his room and he phones down and says, I ordered room service about 45 minutes ago. It's not here yet. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I'm going out. Okay, right, bye. And it would be that essentially for fucking hours and hours and hours. And then occasionally you might get the Red Fox Flies at Midnight, but you're so bored that you wouldn't pick up on it.
You're sleeping there. You're like, what's his name across the street watching Attack of the Puppet People while the break-in's going on.
Yeah, Al Baldwin. You're like Sick Boy in Trainspotting 2. You're sitting eating your noodles when you should be watching the Blacknell video.
Well, given the Peter,
is Trainspotting 2 actually a documentary about living in Edinburgh? I've heard various rumors.
you would think... I read today that Edinburgh is going to open a pub where you can do axe throwing, which sounds
fuck
like...
me. That is not something that you guys need.
Yeah.
Christ almighty.
It's not mental enough out there at the minute.
Fuck's sake. Like, we have that. I mean, we have it, but, you know, once everybody has a gun, what's an axe, really? I think the first place I did that was somewhere like, you know, up in Wisconsin or Michigan or one of those places where nobody lives. And it was I was so horrified after like my third pint of forgetting to release the axe, you know, and just like following through and taking it straight to the groin or your shin or something like that. That's yeah.
That's been the big argument in Scotland, because they won't give licenses in Glasgow to the axe throwing to sell beer. So you can go axe throwing, but you can't go axe throwing and have a drink. So the axe throwing community, which a hitherto massive but undiscovered group of people, I'm sure, are up in arms about the fact that I slag off Civic Scotland a lot, and they do a lot of stupid things. I'm not necessarily sure not allowing Glaswegians who are drunk access to axes to throw.
I mean, it's going to be on the premises whether or not you were drinking before you got there, right? And I'm thinking, look, if they're not selling alcohol, their revenue chances are pretty limited here. I don't think they're going to be turning people away. Like, are they going to be breathalyzing people, you know, trying to get their blood alcohol level before issuing the axe to them? Or are they just going to say, ah, oh, come on, man, here's an axe, go ahead and throw it?
Technically, the alternative is you get the football if you're drunk.
The alternative is you get people throwing axes who are drinking red cola, which is equally frightening.
you can't let me be throwing. Although a couple of years ago, I'm under the impression that I'm useless at anything that involves hand-eye coordination or effort, right?
You could have cut that sentence in half, I think.
Yeah. I mean, as Sally says whenever she says to me, oh, you haven't done that task I asked you to do, and I'm like, no, I haven't, I'm busy. And she goes, you're just sitting reading the paper. I'm like, I'm an artist. I will turn what I am reading in here into gold later, which will pay for the upkeep of this house. So shut the fuck up, I'm working. Right, but we went away to a hotel, and it was one of these hotels that offers, you know, it's out in the countryside. Sure, a lot of listeners will know it, actually, Crieff Hydro. It's a lovely place, big sort of baronial castle. And so you could take, you know, like a Segway tour around the hills and everything, and you can do all this other stuff. But one of the things you could do was shooting. Right, both clay pigeon and target. So Sally booked us for this.
Oh, so not at people. Okay.
Unfortunately, but I was like, I'm going to be shit at this, right? I just automatically assumed. But so we start on the target, and the thing comes back, and it's just like a little ring in the center that I've completely blown out with all my shooting. The guy's like, oh, you've done this before? I was like, nah, first time. So then it gets further and further away, and I just kept same thing, just bullseyes. Clay pigeon started. He's like, you probably won't hit any in your first time. And I got like, you know, 5 out of 6. So it turns out I'm a really great shot. But then as Sally explained it, and I think she's spot on, she went, that does make sense, because it means in a war you would be a sniper, which means no marching, basically just sitting in the same spot for like 26 hours and not having to do any real work apart from occasionally pick the gun up and shoot somebody.
Oh, shit, there's a guy. He's dead.
Magic, right? And that would be, you know, whereas, you know, you who are quite fit and, you know, you're out on a bike and stuff, they'd make you march places. You know, you'd spend ages with like 60-pound pack on your back being marched to somewhere.
Do you think all three of us, would we all have been drafted in Russia this week? I'm kind of... No, I didn't see what their guidelines were, although they appear to be nothing at all. Because if there's one thing Russia's very good at, it's taking any male aged 13 to 60 and just throwing them into a meat grinder.
it's reservists, but apparently the thing is that it takes weeks to get all the Russian reservists together, because a lot of them live out in, like, you know, places with no electricity and no roads still.
Or a lot of them just took planes out to places with no electricity or roads still.
Yeah. Did you see that, by the way? Did you see that documentary about Emiliano Sala?
I saw bits of it. Yeah.
Jesus, that was a sad story. But like, both him and the pilot were at the plane going, fuck, no. And it shows you that never feel bad in your workplace, people, for saying no, because politeness kills. When you're too polite, it's true. It's absolutely true. When you're too polite.
So it's going to Norwich, but.
Yeah, exactly. But it's true. When you're too polite, you don't want to say, I'm not getting on that fucking plane, right? Because we go, oh, well, you know, I'll just do it, even though I have misgivings about it. If you've got misgivings about anything, don't fucking do it. It's not worth it. And if your boss gives you shit about it, just tell him to watch that documentary.
No, it was not a happy ending. Although you kind of think from Salah's point of view, it's like, well, would you not have just said no? Just like, nah.
Didn't feel he could. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's this thing of, you know, oh, who am I? I'll get a bad reputation. People will shout at me. And it's true. You better, like, I'm not fucking doing that. And people will say you're difficult, but, you know, it's better than the potential outcome.
This came up, you know, when I was talking to Andy and Rob yesterday on Heart and Sand, whenever that comes out.
Tomorrow morning.
There you go. Saturday morning. If you want to listen to me even more, you can do it there. But no, is that because, like, I don't like flying in general. I never have. I've never gotten used to it. I have to take like 5 Benadryl and get drunk in the airport bar before I can get on the plane. I don't, and the second I sit down, headphones on, I don't get like, please turn your electronics off. Am I fucked turning the electronics off at the moment where I'm sitting in a steel tube at a 45 degree angle trying to go 30,000 feet into the air? Kiss my ass. Like, there's not a chance in the fucking world I'm turning off my iPod.
My question about that, whenever they say you need to turn your phone off, otherwise the plane might crash. And it's like, guys, are you really telling me that all ISIS have to do
is
book a flight, right? Book a normal flight and turn their mobile phone on? Because I think they would have discovered this by now. You know, I really believe that. So I think you're lying when you say that my mobile phone can do this.
This is a question I got to ask Gary Haviland now, because I always heard it had something to do with like radar something, like the in-flight radar signals or something. But Gary will know. Also, by the way, people, obviously David is here, but we didn't get to do Watergate. But me and Gary did not get to do the history show about the tours because, again, Gary is also quite ill. So we'll get that sometime. I can't do anything about the people. All my wonderful co-stars gained the sickness at the same time. So
Jordy, we didn't hang out together. It wasn't like an orchestrated plan of let's fuck up Shane's recording week. That wasn't.
Well, you and Gary were both in Napoli, so it could have been that.
That's true. No, I know where I got it. A friend of mine came down and to watch the football on Sunday, just the English games, and he had it. Yeah. And then he phoned me the next day. He says, "Look, you're not going to believe this." And I was feeling a bit ropey, and I'm like, "If you fucker," because you can't blame someone. It's not that they deliberately infected you, right? It's not like, you know, Freddie Mercury back in the 80s doing that sort of thing. He did. I always remember that. It came out in the, you know how when somebody dies and they become a saint?
Martyrs.
Yeah. And I remember sitting having this argument with a guy who was a Queen fan one, and he was like, Freddie Mercury was a great guy. He really wasn't. And he's like, he did a lot for AIDS. I was like, yeah, he spread a lot of it. That's, you know, let's not kid ourselves on. He knew he had it, and he went out and continued to have unprotected sex with people. That's not a good person, incidentally. But my friend didn't give me his illness deliberately, although he did listen to the update this week and went, it was quite funny, which I think is taking the piss. I think I've got a right to be annoyed about that.
Oh, yeah. You know, before you got here, me and Peter were talking. He was downplaying the snooker last night. That just reminded me of when COVID first started, and me and like my 5 or 6 mates, my real good drinking buddies, we all got bored, and so we convinced one of our bar owning friends to open his bar so we could just go play billiards all the time, like in the back room, away from the prying eyes of other, you know, studious civic officials or police or our better halves or anything. Where are you going? To stand 12 feet away from somebody somewhere.
Can't talk.
Yeah.
Playing.
Yeah.
When the
how long is the table? I'm about that far away from somebody right now. That's
when it. When the snooker clubs reopened, one of the things they wanted to do briefly was to take antibacterial wipes and wipe the tables. Right, now, yeah. I reckon some of those tables certainly are 70, 80 years old, mm-hmm. and have never, ever seen an antibacterial wipe. So what went on white came off black, and it's like, yeah, I don't want to think about that too much.
No, I've been leaning over this for the last 7 years.
It's like a self-regulating biosystem. You know, it's like your stomach, right? The edge of the tables just clean themselves. You know, they took care of themselves. There's surely no issues with that. Yep. And now you guys have disrupted that with your Lysol, you know, or whatever kind of your Mr. Muscle Wipes or whatever the fuck it is that you guys use.
That's the thing. There's absolutely no illness that can survive on that pool table or that snooker table, rather.
Yeah.
It's tougher than they are. It's going to win. So I agree with you there. I think that there is something brilliant about, like, I was telling everyone on the Crowpod a few weeks ago, we did our show in Dunfermline, in the back room that they put us in before the show, there was a full-size snooker table. And we started playing on it. And you know how the phrase, it's like falling off a bike, you know, that once you know how to do it, you do it. That's a fucking lie. Because me and him played like two dogs. You know, in that picture where the dogs are playing, it was like that, right? Where it got to the point where I said, right, I keep missing. So what I'll do is I'll aim slightly to the left of the pocket or slightly to the right of the pocket and see if it goes in. No, that didn't work either. It was absolutely fucking atrocious. And it was getting mildly better as the game entered its second hour in the first frame. But, you know, the idea that, oh, you just pick up a cue and you're straight back into it. No, that's a lie.
It's absolutely heavy duty in terms of practice, and it's quite sad that the likes of that in golf, it's so much sort of repetition, it's almost robotic that you need to get to. So the idea of sort of flair doesn't really work. It needs to be exactly the same every time.
Yes.
Well, as I started throwing darts again, toward the end of the time in the pub, and it was like, you know, you first get going again, you're like, fuck, how was I ever good at this? And then, you know, after you play 30 games, it's that same, the muscle memory they always talk about, right? And that, the same golf swing, the same, you know, snooker cue, the same dart show, whatever. Like, you just got to get back to a point where you don't think about it whatsoever.
Well, it's the $10,000 idea that if you put in...
Fuck Malcolm Gladwell. That's a fucking idiot.
I interviewed him once.
I'm sorry,
Malcolm Gladwell. I interviewed him once for a podcast.
No, I'm just sorry.
He was very. Yeah, he was definitely, and I don't think anybody could argue with me when I say that he was indeed very. But yeah, 10,000. Yeah. Of course, you'll be better at something 10,000 hours. Although I might be the exception. I've definitely spent 10,000 hours on a guitar. Admittedly,
I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh, God, no. I've spent 10,000 minutes on that. But I've spent 10,000 hours on the guitar. Admittedly, 9,949 of them have been throwing shapes and miming. But that doesn't matter. Surely by osmosis, it should be better.
Wasn't one of his examples the Beatles? And then somebody did the math, and it was like they would have had to start playing together when they were 8 years old for like 6 hours a day. Or it's like, you're, this is utter bullshit. What are you talking about?
It's a conveniently round number, isn't it?
Yes. Anytime you get a conveniently round number, it's made up. Usually it's horse shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like really not 8,876 hours. No, that would be stupid.
Or maybe like, hey, Edmondson House is going to make £1 million in profit every single year. Like, when it's just a round number, probably not accurate.
Yeah, any suspiciously round number is suspicious for a reason, right? That's the problem with it. Like Celtic's attendances, whenever they're not in a good spell, their attendance is always given at like 54,000. You're like, it wasn't that, was it? It really wasn't that. That's the amount of season tickets you've got, wasn't the amount of people in the ground.
And then the VAT man turns up and it's 5,000.
Well, that was like back in the old days where you would go to Parkhead when it really was a toilet, and that's no exaggeration because people used to piss up against the back wall of it. And the place would be absolutely heaving. You know, it was the old terraces, you couldn't move because obviously we were only there for Old Firm games. And then you'd pick up the paper the next day and it was attendance at Celtic Park, 36,000. No, it fucking wasn't. Double that. And remember, you were paying in cash back then. So, you know, there was a few quid, I think, went away in a little bag, you know, like one of those swag bags with a pound sign on it. A few of them went, I think, out the back entrance.
Let's grab the quick break. We got a bunch of good questions. So people came back with questions since we're in the international break. We don't get as much football to talk about. I really don't want to talk about John Benner or Stuart Robertson anymore. Although, no. Again, half the questions have to deal with that kind of stuff. But at least we can make jokes about it instead of actually having to discuss it.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back into the Crow Pod. As always, please scroll down. There's Buy Me a Coffee link. You hit that, you help us out. You get entered in to win some great stuff from our friends at The Famous. And granted, they've released a bunch of, well, at least a couple of new stocking caps. And I think they're, what do you call the neck thing? Snoods?
Snoods.
Yes, they've got some new snoods out. So you can always go check out their stuff over at thefamousheadwear.co.uk or just give us a few bucks and maybe win some stuff like our buddy Rob won last week. So it's getting near the end of the month, so I will be picking winners sometime next week or the month of September.
It was the other Rob, right? It wasn't Rob Short.
No, different. Not that Rob. Not that Rob. A different Rob.
He's not doing anything.
And of course, I got to give a shout out here. We got a few new members this week. Actually, one of them is a very old Crow Pod member, Alex, who Peter will remember from the original show.
Course,
Alex, Alex show. Hi, Alex. But David and Lyle also chipped in, and a few other people, supporters, of course, and everybody's earned in. Shout out to the, I never burp, and then that one just got stuck. Shout out to Erskine Appeal, of course, and the Beats and Cancer Charity, and our buddies up there, Recovery and Repair in East Kilbride. If you need like physiotherapy or massage, whatever, if you need somebody to touch you gently, that's the place to look up there. And then, as always, please go to, there's a couple charities that we're always helping out down in the show notes. Even like if you feel bad about helping us out, which you shouldn't because you love us, you can go get them. And like I said, with all the other shows this week, I got put on hold between David and Gary having the sick. So I did a couple shows just on the the general status of everything that's been going on at the club. So if you're interested in those, you can always go back, find them on the Crow Pod. Everything's good. We are doing questions. Although Peter brought a very special. Well, what the fuck is this? Why is this? What is this, Peter?
What?
Your aeroplane.
Oh yeah. Okay. So that was a picture for Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, who I caught a headline that for his 72nd birthday. He'd imported 8 cheetahs from Namibia, and I kind of thought, well, he's just going to let them go wild in India, but it appears to be slightly more of a conservation project than that. But no, that's the picture they used. So I thought, well, on the back of that, for Ayrshire, David, what non-Indigenous animal would you introduce to Ayrshire? And for you, Illinois... What does Illinois need that it doesn't currently have?
Well, it falls down a bit. Yes, it would be good for the whole... we would maybe get a grant from Call It Out, but I'm not introducing them to Ayrshire. We've managed to get this far, and we're quite happy, thank you, as we are. I'd quite like to again go to The Simpsons. I'd quite like a financial panther. which would be when anybody came to the door looking for money, I owe them. You just let go your Panther and he deals with it, and I'll fucking put them off. It only takes one person to be absolutely savaged by a Panther to realise, it's all right. Let him keep that tenner he borrowed. So I think that would be it. I wouldn't mind introducing a law against intermarriages, though, because there are sometimes even I, as a proud Ayrshireman, sit on a bus and I'm just so grateful that my dad moved from.
Oh, thank God, Northern that's here. What you're talking about.
Okay. Well, no, it is because there's definitely a lot of people who were vaguely cousins who got together down this part of the world. There's no getting away from it. So my dad, thankfully, came in and was a bit different into the gene pool. Because I'll be sitting on the train coming out of Cohen and sometimes you're going, yes. you're the passion of forbidden love, your forbidden passion fruit betwixt brother and sister. So I would definitely introduce some legislation that way, that you need to check your DNA before going on a date.
Vaguely cousins sounds like something on BBC Four.
Oh, doesn't it? Yeah, sounds like a panel game presented by Victoria Corrin.
I think I would introduce, and they're not that far away, so I might. Hold on, again, let me make a note. I might be able to work on
Big
this
feet.
For a future episode. Moose.
Oh,
moose are awesome. I've tried to explain. It's like. It's terrifying when you're driving up through the North Woods and, you know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and parts of Canada and everything, like around Ontario. Todd, if Todd was here, he'd have some frame of reference to this. But sadly, we have Peter. So
there aren't many moose in Northern Ireland or Scotland. No.
They are fucking huge. There was one time it was in the UP. I think I was going from Ontonagon, which is actually a town name. By the way, somewhere further west, like over toward the Porcupine Mountains and everything like that, which is also a real place, by the way.
That's great.
And
well, told
this meetup. Yeah. But no, there was a car probably, I don't know, 200-300 yards in front of me. And I saw the moose on the side of the road because, again, you know, like we have deer around here, which are, they're big, right? A deer's 150, 200 pounds, whatever. I mean, it's a good sized animal. You don't want to hit it. Typically, your car loses when you hit a deer, but a moose, like, you lose, the next three generations in your bloodline lose. Like, they're so fucking tall that unless you're driving one of the, you know, the new American style SUVs or massive pickup trucks, basically you hit their legs and then their whole body comes crushing through the windshield of your motor. And so me, 200, 300 yards behind this car, I saw the moose. And then I saw the moose start walking toward the road, and I saw them not even begin to brake. So I'm assuming they were looking at their mobile phones or, well, it was long enough ago, they could have been changing the CD in their six-disc CD changer. And, just hit the moose, and it was bad. The moose got up, though. It looked like I had a broken leg, but it got up and was like, "Fuck this, I'm out." I'm not trading. I'm not trading insurance information with you.
Yeah, this is. I'm not losing my no claims bonus for this. as the moose heads off, but yeah, you get cool animals in America. We don't get much.
I got mountain lions. I got panthers. I got we got giant snakes that they introduced from the Amazon down in Florida now because they have no natural predators.
Yeah, we don't get anything like that. What have we got? We've got hawks, I suppose. We do have
hawks are cool though.
Hawks are cool,
but I've got hawks in my neighborhood.
Yeah, so. you don't get lions and tigers.
Oh, you get lions with this show, goddammit. You want lions? Right. We'll give you lions.
Damn right. But yeah, we don't tend to have like those kind of fun. We have like stags and stuff, obviously. But generally, that's just for rich people to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to be all your cool animals are basically there for somebody to get on a horse and go
basically,
kill.
Yes. Yeah, that's essentially it. I did quite like, I was as is my want, old history books, and reading one about William the Conqueror's son, Rufus, William Rufus. He was the king following William the Conqueror, 1066, and all that. And one of the laws he brought in was he made it illegal for anyone to hunt. Now, you're waiting for me to say, in general. Every single animal in his kingdom belonged to him, and you could only shoot it with permission of basically the crown. Now, the problem with that is, as you can imagine, back then, there weren't a lot of Sainsbury 24-hour shops.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you can't go pick up some pack of venison or something
And there were no cars, so it's not even like you could drive to the coast and do a bit of fishing and then stick it in the fridge for a while. So basically, to eat, you had to break the law, which was considered by the kingdom a bit offside. And he wasn't the most popular of chaps. But that's a level of selfishness I admire.
Kind of goes in there with Cromwell banning Christmas in that pantheon of nonsense.
Well, look, at the end of the day, you know what Puritans were like? I mean, it's in the name, Puritan. Their job was to make sure that they would walk about looking for anyone smiling. And if they smiled, they would torture you till you revealed why you had smiled and then kill you. A good Christian killing, though.
I think, because we were talking, that new Philomena Kunk series came out. If I remember her talking about the Puritans in the Christmas episode, but she said they didn't want you celebrating Christmas because that wasn't in the Bible. You should be in church on Christmas, which isn't in the Bible, reading a Bible, which isn't in the Bible.
Yeah. But look, they made the rules, right? And I think that we at least kicked the fuckers out.
Yeah, I was going to say, they all came here, and somehow our entire legal system is still based around ideas that they had in the 1600s. Yeah. Like, firearm ownership? Well, let's go look at what John Locke wrote. Mm-hmm. No, let's not.
Yes.
let's not look at the ideas of men who died of syphilis at 38 or old age at 42.
I mean, this was the important stuff that was covered by the Puritans. But you do get pumpkin pie out of it, right? So, I mean,
it's not bad. Pumpkin pie is good.
Yeah.
Let's see. John O'Fraser, our old buddy, wants to know, because I know Peter loves his pop music, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being sleeping on the couch, presumably not with Debbie Harry in this scenario, but 1 being sleeping on the couch and 10 being sleeping forever as a result of murder, how do you think Adam Levine, is it Levine or Levine? Adam Levine is doing today.
I'm the same as you. I saw that on Twitter yesterday, was it? And I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, I may need
to see the booty.
I'm going to need a crash course in what this is all about.
I'm trying to think of the name of the bit. I think he's one of the, is it Maroon 5? I think he's
Jesus.
That one.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
That's why I don't know who it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Happy not to know that, frankly.
Yeah. Well, but he was married to a Victoria's Secret model, and that wasn't good enough. He was shagging some other bird on the side who was not a Victoria's Secret model.
But they do that, the pop stars, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, with the shagging. I think, so long as it's all consensual and above board, then I don't really have a huge problem with it. Again, though, there are these guys who get greedy and spoil it for the rest of us, I think. Because if you or I were dating a Victoria's Secret's model, chances are we'd probably be happy enough with that, I think. You know, certainly. She wouldn't be that happy when she's like, do you want to go out tonight? No. I've got an invitation to Playboy Mansion. I don't care. I'm watching France versus Norway tonight. Yeah, we're not going out. I mean, I don't think it would be that much fun for her, but she's doing the name of, he's doing the good name of Levine down, because Avril Levine, did you see this week? She was interviewed about her 2003 classic Skater Boy.
Is this our ode to Canada since Todd's not here?
I slag Canada a lot, but it did give us Avril. And she was saying, and for those of you who don't know, the song Skater Boy, it's spelled SK, the number 8, TER. And she said, when that song came out, I didn't think people would get it, but it shows you once again, if you just push the creative envelope, that people will get on board with it. And it still baffles me to this day that you hear fast buck merchants like Mozart and what's that other one, Beethoven, right? that people revere, and yet do they revere Avril Lavigne, who put an 8 N instead of the letters A, T, and E. Nah. No, they do not. And I think
see, like Beethoven and Chopin and all them, they put the eights at the end of things. She put it right there in the fucking middle.
Right there in the middle. She challenged her, you know, and it was a bit
you,
like...
You put it at the end, it's like the end of the show. Nobody listens to the last 2 minutes of the show, but if I put that shit right in the fucking middle, people listen to
That's it. And she was like, I want that eight. That eight's important. People have got to notice her. Actually, in terms of having a good wife, Sally, because... As listeners to this will know, we tend to just buy the stuff we want and we don't really wait and say, could you get me that for Christmas or whatever. We have to come up, we create a prize. And one of the things that we do, presents, and one of the things that we do is a lot of rock and roll memorabilia. And Sally got me a signed photograph of Avril Lavigne in her underwear. Now, that is top. In Avril's underwear, not in Sally's underwear. That would have been weird. And probably
you could get that cameo.
In all honesty, but yeah, she's like, I know you love her. I was like, oh, thank you. You know, and quite often I like to look at that picture and just, you know.
One of the most random things I've got, a friend of mine, Lindsay from Knoxville, got me one time. So there was I don't know. She was a pop star, but more like piano driven. More Natalie Merchant than Avril Lavigne, I would say. But her name was Katie Malua, who I think was fairly popular over there for a second. But was she like Lebanese born or something?
Yeah, she was massive here for a few
years. So, yeah. So she came over here on a tour and I saw she opened for somebody. I can't remember what the hell the show was. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. And like got mildly popular for a second. And I was talking to Lindsay about this. She actually wrote her a letter and got me like a personally signed picture from her that just like it just showed up in my post box. Well, I was home at my parents for Christmas, so back in Illinois from Tennessee, and I got mail at my parents' house, and it was a picture and letter from Katie Malua.
That's class.
Yeah, it was nice.
She's very gone nice. Up a bit in my estimate. The reason I didn't like Katie Malua is she had a song called The Closest Thing to Crazy, and it had the line, acting 17 even though I'm 22. And I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, that's essentially 5 minutes after the first point. You know, let's not speak out. Oh, my God, I'm so old. I'm 22. I've got to be more mature. You're 20 fucking two. You're a child still. There is no difference from when you were 17 to when you were 22. Fuck up.
Your brain's not developed. You're not really an adult.
No.
Let's see. We got a few here. Graham Van Lundstrom at Can't Be Arsed. He's got a three-parter, or maybe... Maybe it's a two-part. Anyway, will this be the worst?
Cheeky. That's taken up.
I think it's only a two-parter. I was reading it wrong. Will this be the worst World Cup ever, Peter?
No, and I hate to say it. I actually think because nothing happens in November and the 4 weeks before Christmas, it will just be men sat in pubs watching football while people do Christmas shopping. I actually think it will go down quite well.
I didn't think about that.
Two reasons why I think it will be brilliant, right? And I've got friends. Martin has been, oh, it'll be the worst ever. Two reasons. One, what Pete said, what the fuck else are we going to do? Three reasons. One, it's a time of year. It's going to be great. And then when it's finished, it's Christmas. So you get the World Cup on when you've got an excuse to go bevying constantly, or like me, you've got football nonstop. Then it's Christmas. So that'll be cool. Second, it saves us having to watch Rangers for a month. So
that's a big one right now.
There's a big one. And thirdly, and this is an actually sensible one, the last few major international tournaments, there is a running theme, which is that the players turn up absolutely fucked. The star players, you know, the top guys, because they've been playing 60, 70 matches in the season, and it's now June and July, and they should be on holiday, and instead they're off at a World Cup. It's not the case this year. So we're going to get players when they're kind of in peak fitness as opposed to at the end of a season when they're completely done in. So I think the actual standard of the football will be better as well. Off the field, it'll be a fucking disaster. Did you see those?
Oh, my God. The villages or whatever?
Yeah, the supporter cabins that have been built. They look like the huts
Pikey caravan fucking colony.
Do you know how much they're charging for those, though?
I can imagine they're not cheap. I mean,
500 quid a day if you want to stay in a wooden hut that they are building. It's like Stalag 44 that they're going to put you in.
They look like rows that are hundreds of yards long. I mean, they're
So you couldn't pay me to go to this World Cup, and I mean that. There's no danger I would be setting foot at it. But as a lazy television person with no skin in the game, who can sit and be neutral. The only thing they could do, though, there's one thing they need to do: bump one of the Diddy teams and put Italy in. I don't care that Italy didn't qualify. Right, it's the fucking World Cup. Bump one of the shitehawks and stick.
Well, that was one of the great. They immediately went, we got to start taking the Confederation winner to every World Cup.
We've got to find a way to get them in because, you know, the European champion. And that, although it's a meritocracy and stuff, there will be one really shitty team. We all know it, right? And that we'll also get those patronizing BBC pieces where they go there and they say, this is George. He's a goat herder. But for the first time in his life, he's bought a television so that he can watch his team in the World Cup. And you get these really patronizing things about a BBC reporter eating a fucking traditional cake that's made out of a lemon and a sheep. And I think that we could all agree we could do with less of that. Bung them a lot of money and give them VIP tickets to the final and let Italy play.
Peter, I had to consider, because there's going to be shared experience between the men, you know, like us, just out watching it. You know, I mean, the women are going to be shopping all month, so we're going to have nothing to do to watch football. But similarly, the men actually at the World Cup will not be able to watch it with their wives. So it's going to be a real shared experience amongst men of the world. There will be no women around for this World Cup at all, no matter what.
That'll be good. Four games a day for 10 days at the end of November. Yes, please.
Yeah. Well, see, I love too, is like, look, for the past few years, I was kind of concerned because Thanksgiving Day is a Thursday, and Rangers have played on Thanksgiving Day, you know, for the past few years. It's been great. So, you know, you got the NFL football, and then, you know, typically while I'm finishing up dinner, I can slap the Rangers match on and watch that while I've got the, you know, the 90 pounds of food that I prepare wrapping up. But so I was concerned this year with that. And I was like, oh, yeah, fuck no, the World Cup starts that week. So I'll just be able to watch football all day. Yeah. I don't even have to pretend like I want to watch the NFL, because if you're in my house, I'm not going to do that.
No, I'm actually looking forward to it. And yeah, I accept, as I say, off the field, absolute fucking disaster. But
I don't care.
You know, to me, it's going to be just matches and cool things happening. But you know, that FIFA were the ones that decided to have a whole World Cup in a place the size of Glasgow. So, you know.
Yes, but with none of the football stadiums at Glasgow.
No, with no football stadiums. So, you know, it is going to be, I'm sure, a logistical nightmare. And if there's one thing that we all know as football fans is they're not going to care about you once you get there.
They're going to kill you. Yeah, 44 degrees, don't give a fuck.
They will not give a toss. So I think you would be absolutely insane to go there. But in the UK, where it's freezing and gets dark early, and as you say, you fuck all to do because you're basically waiting for Christmas to come, we'll get 4 weeks of football, 4 weeks we don't need to worry about Rangers. Players should be fit and raring to go for it. And then when it's finished, boom, Christmas. Ideal.
Well, and aren't they going to make them like kick off at like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. in Qatar so that they're on at like
reasonable
times for most of the Western world?
Yeah, but they learned that was Japan, basically. That's what screwed up the hopes of any country out there.
Fuck that World Cup.
That's exactly it, because the timings of the matches were so bad for the Western audiences that the figures were, you know, much lower than
Brazil was fantastic for me.
Brazil was awesome for us too. The games were
It's like in the evening for you guys, and
Like they've told Australia that basically if Australia wants to hold a World Cup, they'll need to have the games at like 4 in the morning 4 a.m. local time. Yeah.
Well, here part two, Peter. I'm sticking with an American kit because I gotta work this. Oh wait, shit! The worst World Cup ever. I gotta go though with the 2002 one because Claudio Reyna should have played at least in a semifinal. Those were the most bent officials that any major tournament has ever seen.
That was
fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, they,
Jesus Christ.
They were getting to the semis.
They
weren't going to let them win it. Yeah, they weren't going to let them win it, but they were getting to the semis. And yeah, I'd agree with that. Worst one.
See, that's well, because I think this one, I didn't think about the quality of the players or Peter's point there about the women not being around. But I was thinking it was going to be the worst World Cup, but I was looking at it from the you know, the standpoint of the pitches actually being laid on top of mass graves from slaves that built the stadiums, and you know, but if I set aside all of the realities of Qatar and just focus on the football, no, I think this could be a pretty good one. That could be
worst one in my life. I can only go the World Cups that I've been kind of sentient for are 86 was really the first one that I remember.
Yeah, mine's Italian 90.
Yeah, I can only judge from 86 onwards. I'd say the worst one football wise was South Africa 2010, where it was just shit game after shit game. And you contrast that with Brazil in 2014, where it was just fantastic for weeks and weeks. So yeah, 2010 for me was probably the worst one.
I'm taking 2010 as well, but for a completely different reason. The Vuvuzela
was
introduced and beaten to
death. Yeah, you couldn't even watch a match with sound on.
Well, bizarrely, and I think it was before 2010, Northern Ireland played in Reykjavik, I think about 2007, 2008, and the Belfast Telegraph, in their infinite wisdom, handed out probably 200 what I can only describe as sawn-off vuvuzelas to very drunk Northern Ireland fans, who proceeded to blow them the whole way through the 90 minutes. That and Iceland beat us 2-1 as well in the final minute. So yeah, that's not my most memorable game.
No, they are appalling inventions. And any time they do something like that where they hand something out to fans to help create an atmosphere is doomed to fail instantly.
I was talking with Peter about this before we got it, because I want to forward Madison, the USL side. And they play, their grandstand, I think me and you were talking about this, David, it's about a century old. It's actually like an ex-baseball grandstand, but they rather smartly took it and kind of like where the home plate area is, basically put all the concessions there, like built a brick, you know, like a steel and brick concession area with the beer and the food and bathrooms and everything. And then took the bleachers, like the left field grandstand, which basically extends from, you know, the end of the pitch at one end to about the edge of the 6-yard box at the other, and just use that as the main grandstand. Then the other end, where would be the left field portion of the baseball diamond, again, there's more concessions and you know, beer stands and everything. And also they kept what appeared to be 3 or 4 cattle out there, one of whom they brought onto the pitch for the ceremonial Diana Ross penalty kick before the match. So yes, they brought a cow onto the park before the match actually started. It was peak Americanist minor league sports thing going on. It was quite good. Quite good. Best World Cup kit is the second part of this question. He throws the West German kit from 90 up there, which, yes, is a classic. I got to go. See, the 2010 World Cup sucked, but we actually played some exciting and fun matches. And also, the 2010 U.S. shirts are the only good series of U.S. shirts ever.
94. Because
the denim, yeah, but that's just because of the quirky. Well, and that, you know, before that, I think people forget because nobody knew that we played football until 1994. But like our 91 through 93 shirts are the same as, like, you know, the Rangers, the France one or whatever. Like we have that same Adidas chassis, but. No, 2010 was good. This was me and our buddy there, Sir Duncan Ferguson, on Twitter. We're talking about that. What makes the kits right is when you pick one fucking chassis, basically, and just change the colors.
Change the colors. Right? And home and aways, that's why 92 to 94 Rangers strips are the best, because you get the same strip in a different color, and that's your away strip. That's should be.
The 2010 version of the U.S. because we had the white shirt with like kind of the off, and they all had a sash on them, but it was a nice crisp white shirt with an off-white sash with navy, you know, like a navy collar, done. And then the chain shirt was a navy blue shirt with a white sash with red trim, done. And then we had like the third strip, which was the red with a navy sash. Done. That was you know, all three exactly the same. Look good, look clean. And I just counted. So since 2010, the U.S. has worn, I think, 23 different kits in competitive matches. Jeez. In 12 years. That's insane.
That's quite impressive. That's more than us. I reckon, though, that American strip, and you know I'm right here, American, there's a lot about America that you know, it can be laughed at and criticized, but there's a lot of good stuff. And in particular, the flag is fucking awesome. Right? It's an awesome flag. That should be your strip. Should just
well,
be.
Well, the 2012 Copa America one was like just blue or white and red hoops. See, but that's the problem. It turns into a hoop shirt, and I'm just not.
Eh. No, but you could have that, but with the blue up the top, you know, and the stars and everything. I just, you know, you've got a really cool flag. Use it. Did you see that? I think we were all impressed last year with the Finland kit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the flag, and it was smart as toast. So I would go with that. I've had a look at the kits this year, and there's a lot of kind of dull ones. I sent you this one, right? I love every World Cup, pretty much, the Germany strip. This one, my first instinct on it was, And I'll just ask people to go and look up Germany strip for the upcoming World Cup and see if it reminds you of a certain political movement 1920 to about 45 that was very popular in Germany for a while.
There's a guy modeling it on the Adidas website too, who has a mustache of a certain kind also.
Unfortunate. Maybe if it was another country, I probably wouldn't have thought that. It's just the association. I was like, and I sent it to you going, just me, and Shane and Todd both went, no, that's quite fascist. It's a smart top, but it's also a top that you could equally wear when representing Germany or when attending a sort of like biker rally.
If you think about the classic Ajax shirt, but kind of change the colors up a little bit, that's what you kind of got going on here.
The Cameroon kit's a classic in terms of green top, red shorts, yellow socks. And it takes you back to sort of Roger Miller, but also them kicking Claudio Caniggia down that right wing one after another, but back in 90. I mean, the one for me is the 1982 Northern Ireland kit, a funkier kit you will never see, a shinier and more flammable kit you will never find. I suspect it would catch fire if somebody lit a cigarette 50 feet away. And it was from the time where there was absolutely no wicking technology put into football tops. That they were not built for comfort. They were scratchy as hell. And that's a classic from 82.
I think we were talking about this after Seville, David, that, you know, like the people, I wore my 9-in-a-row shirt, but I went to a pub in Illinois where it was like a comfortable 24 degrees that day, you know? Whereas anybody who stood outside in that kit for that many hours died, because that thing is just a furnace. That was Jesus Christ.
That was like Ali, our podder Ali, who does the tactics show, who's from North Carolina, lives in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, Ali Bain, yeah.
Ali Bain, yeah. So he's used to heat, right?
Yeah.
But when we went to Seville, which was very warm, it was about 40 degrees, on the day of the match, Ali decided to wear the 96, 97, 9-in-a-row top. The lovely Brian Laudrup one, you know, with a white collar.
Oh, that's the same thing I had on that day.
Right. Yep. But he wore the original, which
I'm
convinced Adidas used to think that Rangers had to play football matches in the Arctic Circle. Because this thing is like, honest to God, it's like sleeping bag material, right? And the poor bastard was absolutely fucking melting under it, just completely and utterly, you know. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And you feel it, and it is incredibly thick. So that's maybe a good thing for Qatar coming up, that they should let one team go skins, shouldn't they?
Like, well, you could get the 2002 when Cameroon wore the basketball jersey, the sleeveless ones. Yeah.
And they banned that after it.
They banned it before that, and Cameroon told them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah. No, you've got to have sleeves, and you're not allowed either, because another thing Cameroon did was a one piece, like a leotard, because he said, well, you know, we got a fine if players' shirts come out, so this stops that happening. And you were like, you're not wearing a fucking leotard to play football, or FIFA rather.
Let's see. God damn. I thought we were going to get through a lot of these. See, I'm sorry, everybody. This is what always happens with the questions. Craig Watson asks, who played for them that you would have liked to have played for us, and who from us would you have liked to see him play?
Mo Johnston. There's quite a few of our players that I'd like to see play for them.
Yeah, there's a lot I could ship out. No problem.
There will could be quite a few of them. Michael O'Halloran.
Oh, he did not pass the mouth test.
Yeah, I think everyone would have preferred that arrangement to the one that actually happened, except Celtic themselves.
Peter, you got anything different than that one?
People know my views on Kenny Miller, so I think we'll leave that there.
I think me and you have always shared that common sentiment there. Michael wants to know, as the all-powerful fan media, why isn't Ibrox 200,000 capacity yet? Why doesn't Haaland play for us, and why isn't the pitch blue?
Because I don't want it to be, and as we all know, I make all the decisions at Rangers, so it's because of that. That's why I don't want it to.
I could get some Kentucky bluegrass. We could do that. We could resell the pitch we could go like a Boise State. Their football team actually has blue turf, like bright blue turf, and then famously always insists on wearing all blue uniforms at home, so that their players just kind of fade into the
It's quite good thinking, isn't it?
It's a nightmare for opposing quarterbacks.
I remember playing in a match years ago, and I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. And you know, you're used to shit pitches when you're playing amateur football, but the other team seemed to be getting on fine, whereas my team, we just couldn't figure it out. And it was only at half time that one of the boys noticed that the centre circle seemed to be where it was all draining to. And it meant that when we looked at it, basically the pitch was slightly sort of all concave towards central.
It was a sinkhole instead of a crown.
What it meant was, it didn't matter what direction you were running, you were going uphill. Right? If you were attacking, it was impossible. If you were attacking, didn't matter what half of the pitch you were on or where you were, because it always, as I say, sort of caved in towards the centre. And the other team knew this and adapted to this. And we were fucking six down at half time. And we came back and said, once we figured it out, it was like, I think it finished, 8-3. But there's nothing wrong with getting a home advantage out of your pitch.
Judging by the number of spares there were for Dundee United, we'd have 151,000 spares if we'd have 200,000 all-seater. So, yeah.
Also, you'd be getting into the breathing difficulty stage, I think, at the top of that. I think the air would be a bit too thin once you get up there.
We'll do one, since everybody wanted to talk about the news of the week. Robert Cameron asks, if you were to release a statement that said nothing, then a follow-up to elaborate on that nothing, what would you say and where would you post it?
That is basically heart and hand, isn't it? 12 years of it.
It wasn't you this week, so that's fair.
It's just basically the...
I'm still waiting. When's the follow-up on the great recruitment policy coming? Because we heard about that one on Wednesday, and now it's Friday, and I still haven't seen Robertson's comments on our recruitment policy.
I think you're more likely to see Wilson. I think. You should see the person who's responsible for it rather than anyone else. But I enjoy a wee bit of saying that. My favourite saying nothing still remains political ones, especially when they're running. We just saw this with the people that were vying for the Conservative leadership, and they would say things like, "We will govern boldly." Okay, what does that mean, though? Well, it means that we won't be afraid to make the big decisions. But what does that mean, though? Could you give me some detail on this, please? Well, we just told you we're going to govern boldly, and it's like, right, I can see where this is going, okay? And I'm not best pleased about it, but I'm just, for my own sanity, going to walk off. Although, I was telling you this, Shane, the other week, that Sally has noticed that, and once she pointed it out to me, I've noticed, and friends have agreed with me, that I speak in a very circular fashion. And the reason I do that is that I never want to be committed to doing something. So Sally says, like, for instance, if she'll ever say to me, do you want to do this? I'll say, well, maybe. Or, yeah, I can see the advantages in that. It depends, though. So we'll have to come back and maybe talk about it later. And she said, you never, ever do anything so in case. And I reckon it's watching Yes Minister for years, where you don't want to commit to something ever, because then you can be pinned down on it. So I'll never agree to anything or disagree with anything. I'll just sort of leave the conversation permanently open. So,
Peter, I want to know this. Who made less sense out of the two directors that we heard from this week for you?
Oh, Mr. Robertson, for sure.
Okay, yeah. I don't understand how you come to a follow-up with that few answers. That was...
How does a cuboid go 550% over budget? I don't understand.
Nope. I mean, this is what I said on the one I did Wednesday. It's like, he's talking about that. He's talking about the problems with the wage bill, or the fact that players had riders on their contracts if we made it to the Champions League. Again, avoided mentioning any riders that him or other directors might have should we make it to the Champions League. But setting that one aside, if these are issues, that's on you're the fucking managing director. Like, you fucked up. If the wage bill is out of control, if capital projects are 550% over budget, that's on you. And that was what frustrated me the most about the questioner to him, not just going, okay, but wait, aren't you the one who sets all these kind of guidelines that the business is supposed to follow?
Like, your secondhand news was very good on that and worth going and catching up on. Wow. Although before it started, I had the bizarre experience of getting a sort of a whispering ASMR Air France advert at the front end of it with the tagline "Elegance is a journey," and then it's a 15-minute rant of it. So that was good. Enjoyed that.
Oh man. All right, here, let's a couple more quick ones and we're gonna get the hell out of here. Mike Marceau, did you ever find out if it's possible to throw a kettle over the Loudoun Tavern?
Right, actually that's very interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because this came about with a conversation we were having one night in one of our group chats. And David Marshall very loudly claimed he would be able to throw a kettle over the Loudoun Tavern. So we asked the Loudoun Tavern if they would be okay with, at one point over the next year or so, if we could arrange to test this. So we're still negotiating with David for the actual rules in place, because he wanted to stand right at the front door and throw it, and we're like, no, you need to be on the road outside it. And he's like, right, okay, well, where do I need to get it to? And I said, well, you need to get it into the back courtyard. And he said, well, you know, it's quite a wide building, and he's like, does the kettle need to be full? And I was like, well, that strikes me as being impractical.
Yeah,
I
think also we'd be okay. Maybe dangerous, you know.
Yeah, we'd be okay with the kettle being emptied, but it needs to be a proper kit. He wanted one of the plastic ones, you know, the $9.99 ones. And I'm like, no, it needs to be a metal kettle, I think. So we're currently just negotiating on the rules, but David will attempt to throw. He's also said, you know, that you don't think it's a big thing, but then he's like, do I get practice throws? And we're like, no, of course you don't get practice throws. So there's a bit to go. You go, what? Thank you. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So look, if you're going to mouth off and make a statement like that, get your ass out, throw the kettle.
Throw the kettle. Right? He needs to turn up, stand outside the Loudon in the road. We'll have a guy filming at the front and a guy filming at the back.
Yeah.
The Loudon, well,
just make sure, David, don't put it behind a paywall for 3 hours at the first and then release it later.
The Loudon,
if you're going to record it, just show it to people.
Of course it's
right
going behind
the
fucking paywall. You think that's... Yeah, fucking this shit pays for itself. Don't be ridiculous. You're the one that gives stuff away for free. I don't fuck that. The thing about it is, the Loudon have been pretty good, except when it comes to one slight concern they have, which is, well, what happens if he doesn't get it over the roof and it sits on top of the roof? Who'll go and get it? And I was like, well, it's not really our problem then, is it? You know.
What happens if it goes through the roof?
Again.
Greg's got less to do these days. He can get up there and fix it.
Wouldn't it be shabby roof manufacturer if that was the case, rather than anything that the kettle did? We'll see. We do plan to do this, David's kettle throw for charity. But yeah, he talked the shit. He gave it the big, I can do this. And he was so confident he would brook no... but as I said to him, I said, oh, this boasting butters no parsnips, David. We need to see if this, if you know, we need to so yes, probably not over the winter, but I would just, you know, if you're looking for an event around about the March time of the year, I suspect we might build it in as a sort of opening act, a live show at the Loudon, David's kettle.
Jesus Christ.
You know, David's kettle throwing, because that way, you know, we could have everybody at the front. And then,
yeah, make everybody witness this. Yeah.
Well, on a match day, it would be quite difficult because obviously the whole area is
packed. You don't want that. Well, and again, somebody could get smacked in the head with the kettle. You know,
yeah, whereas a live show, the only people in the pub are there to see us, so we can say to everybody, right, everybody out the front, and then, you know, nobody's going to get hit by it in the back, and then you throw the kettle. We'll have to wait and see. Also, there is a bit of debate, and the listeners can help me out in this, as to whether or not alcohol should be allowed to be consumed before he does it, because could that not be
would
classed...
encourage it.
But could that not be classed as a performance enhancing drug?
I'm not sure. You know what, I'll test run this theory at my favorite pub, Mary's Place,
right,
prior to this, and I will do it sober. And then I will sit there for 8 hours, and then we'll try it again later on in the evening, and we'll see how the results pan out.
So. I believe that is a good idea.
Last one, Carefree Cholak, Carefree CJ 1872 wants to know, do any of us believe in simulation theory, which I believe is the one where the universe doesn't actually exist? It's all a simulation. And if so, though, who the fuck picked this one?
Yeah, it wouldn't. If that was the case, I'd have hair.
Oh man, I always find the Boltzmann brain theory kind of fun. Are you guys familiar with this one?
No.
It's like, given enough time, atoms will randomly join into, like, you'll basically have atoms that can form what functions as a human brain out of themselves, right, given a long enough scale of time. And then that thing could create its own idea of what the universe is within itself. But so then, it's kind of a modified simulation theory.
Yeah. But then you've got like the infinite monkey, which says that if monkeys are left with a typewriter, they'll eventually come up with the complete works of Shakespeare. Whereas we all know that when it was tried by Mr. Burns, what they came up with was it was the best of times, it was the blurst of times. So I'm not sure that one holds.
One last note here while we were talking, just in the crazy America update. So there's been this recent spat of conservatives. I'm not even going to try to fuck the fucking crazy people that tried to overthrow our government and, you know, want to see what you do in your bedroom, basically. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these people have been calling hospitals, bomb threats to hospitals.
What?
Because, yeah. And and now apparently there's a whole rash of them across the country today of people calling in hoax school shootings. which has got to be incredibly funny for the parents who find out about this while their kids are at school.
Why?
Because the cruelty is a feature, not a bug, you know. Because they're the same kind of people that would take, you know, people from Venezuela seeking asylum from a country that's fucked up because of right-wing American intervention fucked it up, and then put them on a plane in Texas and fly them to Martha's Vineyard just for a political stunt.
You blame Henry Kissinger for everything. As you know, everything looks bad if you're going to remember what actually happened, Shane.
You know, I forgot about this at the end of the last Wiregate episode, because you know Nixon said during his speech that Gerald Ford would become president at noon tomorrow, right? Famously, he became president at 11:35 a.m. when Henry Kissinger initialed and timestamped the letter that he got from Dick Nixon, because history doesn't happen to Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger happens to fucking history. God damn it. You think you get to resign at what time? Fuck that. You're resigning right now. Kiss my ass.
Although at least this was one of the rare occasions where he did something that didn't cause some poor people in a far-off country to die. So,
can you prove to me what he did in that 25 minutes between when Ford, you know, wasn't president and thought he, you know, come on.
Probably.
You think he wasn't doing something awful?
Again, you know, you can prove anything with facts. Henry's managed to just... scut right past any of those things, you know.
Probably shagged Deborah Harry while he was doing this.
Whenever somebody's come up with like, and Henry Kissinger go, I don't recall that. And I go, well, actually, we've got here this letter that you've signed saying, ha ha ha, I did it, Henry Kissinger, 1976. and he'll go, well, you know, it was a different time. And people will just go, oh, well, fair enough. And he stoats along, quite happy, indestructible.
Won't die. Incredibly won't die. Oh man. Like I said, please scroll down, buy me a coffee link. If you've been doing the Cropot or the Watergate stuff, if you go back to the last episode, there's a link in that either on Heart and Hand or in the Cropot where you can leave us basically a voice message for any questions that you may have. We've gotten a few in. We will be back to do Watergate next week once David's fully recovered. And also me and Gary Havlin will be back with the history show about Winnipeg 1954 next week. So that will be coming. Me and Colin are coming back. I don't know. Pretty much everything will get back to normal next week. I kind of took the advantage of the international break. Although, fuck me. I miss 1995 when there were breaks and like there wasn't anything to talk about with Rangers because I was 11. I can't remember the last time we just had an international break and it wasn't surrounded in shit. It's an incredible the consistency streak that our club seems to interject.
And we've got the SPFL are, I think, going to work in Livingston to try and ram this TV deal through. So that's happening too.
Yes. Yeah. The television contract worth less than the existing one.
We told you, right, when we did that show the night the story broke, we said they'll change the voting rules to get the result we want. That's what will happen.
Oh, yeah.
Same as they always do.
Nope, they're pretty good at it. That is the one consistency. Don't like the result? We'll change the laws. Don't worry about it.
We'll change the laws to air it. So you know, as soon as it was mooted, it's going to happen because they'll just fix it that it gets through.
Yeah, it's we've only got the nine. Conveniently, we just passed a new law that said you only need 9 votes to change the law in order to get a quorum on a new television contract. Yeah, so
that's what will happen? 100%.
Oh, fuck it. Peter, thanks for coming back. No, I think you're still back next week, I think. Maybe. I can't remember. I don't know. We'll have you back more either way. It doesn't. Whatever. Fuck Todd. Who needs him?
lazy Todd.
Cool. Thank you. A pleasure.
No, thanks again. Corey, Peter, you can always find us at CSRO6 and, well, pretty much most matches. I think everybody listens kind of knows how to find him. So, David, of course, everything Heart and Hand. Find him on Twitter, iBoxRocks. Check out everything. Again, Wiregate 50, 8 episodes in. I've actually had a bunch of people reach out saying that they just started it within the past week. They were kind of doing the thing that we all do with Hulu, like television series now. Like, wait till 80% of the series is out and then start. So
no, that's a good idea. And as I say, we'll be back Monday to get the next part of it done.
Yeah, but the post-president. Ooh, we get to do the David Frost interview. That'll be fun.
Yeah, winter in, what was it? It was described Nixon in winter. So yeah, that is actually quite a fun chat. Bill Clinton features in it.
Shows up.
Two presidents that he, Reagan and Clinton, and it's not the one you think that Nixon was close to. Let's put it that way.
So that'll be coming Monday. And again, like I said, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link, because we are picking winners at some point next week for the rest of September. Fuck me. I made it all the way through without one stutter. We'll be doing that at the end of the week, so hit that up. So that's it. Enjoy the weekend. One more week without the Rangers here, and then we get back to that. And that's it. Y'all be good. Thanks.
Some people call me the space cowboy.